Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Economics Report and American Mosaic, coming up after As It Is.
Greetings once again and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington, with a program that aims to help you learn and improve your American English. If you are just listening on the radio, you are missing out on a great learning experience. Be sure to use our website also, learningenglish.voanews.com, to find many more stories than we have time to put on the air. Now, on to today's program. First, we'll hear from Thailand, where the government has recently been overthrown. The country's new military leaders hope their diplomats can help explain the coup to the rest of the world and soften Thailand's image overseas. We'll have details. Then, the future in energy production is garbage. No, it really is. At least that's what some experts are predicting. You will be surprised at what may become a major source of power in the future. Those are the two items we have for you today as we learn American English and hear about our world as it is. Earlier this week, the head of Thailand's army gave orders to some of the country's top diplomats. General Prayut Chan-o-cha told them to seek international understanding for the military's ouster of the government. The general organized the military overthrow, or coup, last month. He now holds all administrative and legislative power in Thailand. General Prayut Chan-o-cha met on Wednesday with 23 of Thailand's ambassadors and general consuls working in 21 countries. The general told the diplomats that they have a duty to create international understanding about the coup last month. Thai military and foreign ministry officials reported his comments. Thailand's military rulers have set up a group called the National Council for Peace and Order to govern the country. The military has detained several hundred people, including politicians, activists, and members of the media. Many have been released after being held for a week or two in military camps. Some of those targeted have disobeyed orders to surrender. Among them are Thais living overseas. As the general met with diplomats, a number of Thai military commanders were on their way to China. They were to meet with top-level Chinese army officials. The two countries have held joint exercises in the past. Thailand's military rulers say China has been supportive of the coup. But Western nations, including the United States, have been critical of the government's ouster. The U.S. military suspended training operations with Thailand's forces in answer to the coup. Pavin Chachavalpongpun is an associate professor with Kyoto University in Japan. He describes relations between Thailand and China after the coup as a win-win situation. He notes the physical closeness of the two countries and their growing economic ties.
The pressure from Western countries, United States and Australia, could have played a role in pushing Thailand a little bit closer to China, and knowing that there would be a lot of interest in so doing anyway.
China is already Thailand's biggest trading partner. Trade between the countries is expected to reach $100 billion next year. General Prayut has expressed a need to return happiness to the Thai people after a long period of political unrest. Another Thai military official spoke to VOA after the coup. He said a goal of the ouster of the civilian caretaker government is to permanently end the political influence of former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawat. He was overthrown when the military ousted the government in 2005. But the party he supported won the elections in 2011, and his sister, Yingluck Shinawat, later became prime minister. The future in energy production is here, and some of the materials used to supply the energy may surprise you. Companies have developed a way to turn plant wastes and other garbage into fuel. It has been called one of the most promising technologies in alternative energy. And as we hear from Jonathan Evans, the process is expected to become more common this year.
The American-based company Fiberite is taking the lead in this new form of energy production. Truckloads of garbage are sent to Fiberite's test plant in Southern Virginia. Randy Garrett heads the plant. He says old vegetables, cardboard boxes, and other waste become something much more valuable through the work done at the factory.
What we're doing is taking a that was originally headed for a landfill. Half of this material is going to be processed for the conversion of biofuel such as ethanol.
Ethanol makes up about 10% of America's fuel supply. Nearly all of it comes from corn, the food known as maize in some countries. Critics say this creates competition between food and fuel and raises food prices. Environmentalists say farmers are using more land to plant corn crops. They also say farmers are using more fertilizers and products for killing insects. They say this creates more pollution. But Fiberite does not depend on corn to produce fuel. Randy Garrett says the garbage is loaded into a huge pressure cooker.
That converts your paper, your cardboard, banana peels, any organic fibers, it converts it to a pulp. That pulp is what we're after for our energy fuel conversion.
The material that comes out of the cooker is mostly cellulose, a substance that can be made into sugar. The sugar can then be turned into ethanol. In 2007, President George W. Bush signed a law that required increasing amounts of ethanol in U.S. gasoline. One goal of the law was to support production of new kinds of fuel. The energy created from plant material would produce fewer environmentally harmful gases than those from oil-based fuels. This year, several other fuel production plants are expected to start making ethanol from the cellulose in corn stalks, wheat straw, and other plant material. Madhu Khanna is an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. She says making cellulosic ethanol turned out to be harder than expected.
We know how to do that in a lab. It's the main problem is doing that in a continuous way, cost-effectively on a large scale.
Ethanol production from cellulose has yet to meet expectations. However, this year could be the turning point. But Madhu Khanna says our cars may limit how much the industry can grow.
Even if we can begin to produce this cost-effectively, we need to be able to consume it as well.
Only a few models of automobiles can operate on high ethanol fuel. Without more of them, there is only so much gas from garbage that will sell. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington on this Friday, the 13th of June. And oh, what an exciting day it was way back in 1884 when the world's first roller coaster opened at Coney Island, not far from New York City. It did not look exactly like today's modern rides, but thousands of people lined up to buy tickets for 5 cents to ride the 600-foot-long Gravity Pleasure Switchback Railway. It traveled at the amazingly slow speed of 6 miles per hour and dropped only 50 feet. But look what it started. Well, it's time to go. More Learning English shows await you, and world news follows at the beginning of the hour. This is As It Is on VOA.
The Economics Report is next, followed by American Mosaic. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. The Chinese and Indian foreign ministers have discussed ways to ease tensions and increase economic ties. It was the first high-level meeting between the Asian powers since a new government took power in India. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi and his Indian counterpart Sushma Swaraj met for 3 hours in the Indian capital, New Delhi. Afterwards, Indian officials said both countries agreed much could be done to improve their economic relationship. Gautam Bombawali of India's foreign ministry says China will consider the possibility of expanding economic cooperation between the two countries.
Foreign Minister Wang Yi also said that the economic development of India is something that is supported by the Chinese government.
Indian officials say more Chinese investment could reduce India's trade deficit with China. That deficit has increased to more than $30 billion. India says it wants more Chinese investment in roads, ports, and other systems. India also would like increased investment in manufacturing, areas in which India is behind China. Some foreign policy observers in India expect new Prime Minister Narendra Modi to increase economic ties with China as he tries to meet his campaign promise to develop India's economy. But the two countries also have a disputed border in the Himalayas. The conflict remains unsettled after years of negotiations. India accused Chinese troops of entering its territory in the past year, raising tensions. The Chinese Premier Li Keqiang was the first foreign leader to congratulate Prime Minister Narendra Modi in his election victory. Mr. Modi described China as always a priority in India's foreign policy. Mr. Modi took an aggressive position about China and Pakistan during his campaign. However, he has shown signs that building ties with neighboring countries will be important. Tibetan refugees in New Delhi demonstrated as the Chinese and Indian officials met. Such protests are usual when top Chinese officials visit India. The country is home to the Dalai Lama and the headquarters of the Tibetan government in exile. Tibetan leaders in India are hoping for more support from Prime Minister Modi. An Indian Foreign Ministry spokesman said several high-level meetings are planned this year. One will include a visit by the Chinese Premier to India. And that is the Economics Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter.
Go Welcome to American Mosaic from VOA Learning English. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the show, we hear new music from Iggy Azalea and Ariana Grande. We also tell about the United States flag. But first, we take a look at some recently recovered works by former pop culture artist Andy Warhol. Artist Andy Warhol was best known for his paintings of actress Marilyn Monroe and a large can of a Campbell's soup. But what few people remember is his experimentation with a computer called the Amiga. Warhol's art on that computer might have been lost if it was not for the work of an art and technology partnership. Marcia James reports.
Keith Baer is a computer software engineer in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Entering the lower level of his house is like stepping into a computing time machine. His big equipment and noisy disk drives have spent years collecting dust in other people's homes. Keith Baer belongs to the Carnegie Mellon University Computer Club. Other club members call him the Amiga guru or expert. The Amiga was a product of Commodore International. Back in 1985, the Commodore Amiga was the latest and greatest computer in the industry. The company got Andy Warhol to demonstrate its capabilities at an Amiga launch party. The artist used its image-making equipment and a revolutionary device, a digital camera.
He took some digital pictures and then modified them, you know, before most people had been thinking about digital photography at all.
So we'll go up to color and pick yellow.
Andy is selecting from the menu bar.
And that was all the public saw of Andy Warhol's computer art. The artist died in 1987. His computer and its floppy disks were put into storage at the Andy Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh. They remained there for 25 years. That might have been the end of the story. But then Divya Heffley of Carnegie Museum of Art came across a YouTube video. It shows Warhol at the Amiga launch.
What computers have you worked on before?
Oh, I've worked on anything. I've waited for this one.
Really?
Ms. Heffley is producing a documentary series called The Invisible Photograph. She knew Warhol's Amiga work should be included.
Those drawings would have been lost.
That idea brought the Carnegie Museum of Art together with the Andy Warhol Museum and the Carnegie Mellon University Computer Club. All three wanted to recover the information from Warhol's Amiga computer. The researchers were filmed as they explored the disks for the first time. Keith Baer said it took them some time just to learn how to use the software.
Not only is it relying on the digital media surviving, another thing that's sort of that we don't really think about is you also need to be able to have software that's able to understand that digital data.
But with some recovery software engineering work, they were able to make the disks work.
There it is.
I think that is a Warhol that nobody has ever seen before.
The famed images of a digital Campbell's soup can and Warhol's picture of himself are just some of the 23 images recovered from the floppy disks. Divya Heffley says the search for the stored art is both a history lesson and a warning.
If we're not careful, technology will become obsolete and we will no longer have the ability to see the photographs, to see the images that we hold so dear and so precious.
The Warhol images can be seen on part 2 of Carnegie Museum of Art's the invisible photograph. It is called Trapped, Andy Warhol's Amiga Experiments.
Tomorrow is Flag Day in the United States. President Woodrow Wilson proposed the holiday in 1916. So again did President Calvin Coolidge in 1927. But Congress did not pass the measure until 1949. President Harry Truman signed the bill, making June 14th the national observance in honor of the United States flag. So, how did the U.S. flag come to be? The United States of America began as 13 British colonies. Each colony had its own flag. But the colonists created a common flag to fight under during the Revolutionary War against Britain. This flag looked a lot like the American flag today. It had 13 red and white stripes for the 13 colonies. It had a blue square in the upper left corner. Inside the blue area were the red cross and white lines of the British flag. On July 4, 1776, the American colonists declared their independence. The United States of America was born. The Continental Congress of the new nation approved a new flag on June 14, 1777. The 13 red and white stripes remained, but 13 white stars replaced the British flag inside the blue area. The stars represented, in the words of Congress, a new constellation. In 1818, American lawmakers approved a law that said a new star would be added to the flag for each new state. Today, there are 50 states and 50 white stars on the flag. Francis Hopkinson, a delegate to the Continental Congress, said he designed the flag. Most historians accept his claim. Just about every American knows the story that a woman named Betsy Ross made the first American flag. Betsy Ross was from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She made flags for many years and was the official flag maker for the Pennsylvania Navy. But this is how she came to be known as the maker of the first American flag. In 1870, a grandson of Betsy Ross, William Canby, wrote a paper about her. He wrote that when he was 11 years old, his grandmother told him the story of how she made the first United States flag. She told him a committee led by George Washington visited her in June of 1776. The men asked Betsy Ross to make a flag based on a design they gave her. The stars had 6 points, but Ross suggested that stars with 5 points would be easier to sew. During the Revolutionary War, several other people were also known to have made flags for the new nation. Among them were Cornelia Bridges and Rebecca Young of Pennsylvania, and John Shaw of Maryland. The American flag has been called different names, including Stars and Stripes, Old Glory, and Star-Spangled Banner.
First things first, I'm the realest.
Billboard magazine says Fancy, from Australian pop star Iggy Azalea, is the top single in the United States for a second week. That is a nice birthday present for the artist. She just turned 24 on Monday. Here is her song, and Catherine Cole with other music news.
I'm so fancy. You already know I'm in the fast lane. From LA to Tokyo.
Iggy Azalea pushed John Legend's All of Me out as top single last week. That song is now third on Billboard's Hot 100 list. The number two song comes from a young woman with a problem.
Ziggy Iggs, I got one more problem with you, girl. Hey!
Singer and actress Ariana Grande released Problem at the end of April. It is the lead single off her new album, which is still in production. And guess whose voice is heard on the song? You got it, Iggy Azalea.
Is this thing on? Oh, I thought they silenced us, yay. Power to the people.
The Bonnaroo Festival opened Thursday in the southern city of Manchester, Tennessee. Kanye West, Elton John, and Jack White are among the stars performing at the four-day music event. The festival also offers parades, art and theater workshops, and other activities. We leave you now with an American rock group performing at Bonnaroo 2014. Here is Vampire Weekend.
You toss aside like a pile of leaves. I gotta find some better weeds. 4 or 5 meters running around the bend when the government may just surround you again. If dying young won't change your mind, baby, 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 ride on down.
I'm Katie Weaver. Do you have a question about American life, people, or places? Send an email to learningenglish@voanews.com. We might answer your question in a future show. Join us again next week for American Mosaic from VOA Learning English.